everyone, I'm Colin Ellis, best-selling author, award-winning public speaker, and facilitator of global workplace culture change. And in this, the Culture Makers podcast, I get people managers from around the world to share actionable things that you can do too to create a great place to work. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Culture Makers podcast with me, Colin Ellis. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Bhavya Misra, who's the director and head of HR for Lenovo in India. Bhavya has over 14 years experience in the FMCG and technology sectors, specifically in HR roles. She started her career, so far as I can tell, but we'll find out from her, in Pepsi, went away for a couple of years and then came back. But now she's director and head of HR for Lenovo, and she joins me now from Bangalore. Hello, Bhavya. How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much, Colin, for having me. The pleasure is all mine, and I'm very happy to be here. Thanks, Colin.
Fabulous. So did I get that right? Did it all start for you with Pepsi? Was that your, did you study HR, Bhavya, and then just decide that, you know, kind of to look for experience in the industry?
That's right. Actually, interestingly, I mean, I did my undergrad in physics. And all through my education, I was, a proper science nerd. But then, while I was studying physics in my undergrad, I realized that it's not something that I wanted to do academically, which is when I shifted over to management. And within that, human resources interested me a lot. And yes, you're right. I did start my career with PepsiCo. That was my first full-time job after.
That is quite the shift from physics. I'm not sure if this is the fifth season I've done. I'm not sure I've ever met anyone who's gone from physics to HR. You must have really disliked physics. That's all I'll say.
Actually, not. Interestingly, I think what I learned, with my professors as well as my colleagues, some of the students that I was studying with, I realized that while I really enjoyed it as a subject, I did not want to pursue it academically full time. I realized I did not have, the patience to pursue an academic career. I wanted more on the job kind of an experience. I wanted more action and I wanted more interaction with people. And I realized hence that management might do it for me, and which is where I decided to take the MBA and go in there.
Yeah. And so then, Pepsi was the first opportunity that you had. And what was the role then, Bhavya? What did you walk into in terms of a role? Were you on a development program or was it very much learn on the job?
It was actually an extremely focused and well-run management trainee program for a year, Colin. And interestingly, for the first 6 months, I did not do any HR. It was pretty much sales and factory and all of that, Also, PepsiCo focuses a lot on your development initially. It's not so much about delivery as it is about learning. So I really spent time on the ground going in trucks, actually selling Pepsi, understanding how it works, what are the margins like, what are the issues on the ground. And similarly with other functions like supply chain, logistics, all of that, because it's so critical to the business. And then in the second half of my first year is when I shifted to HR and I started working out of a factory, and I was actually the factory HR person. We have bottling plants in India, and one such bottling plant I started my training in. And then eventually after my training stint, I actually started heading HR for that factory. So it was really quite interesting as a learning, and factories in India, and specifically this one, was unionized. So a lot of learning, in the first stint itself is what I can remember at this time now.
That is your first HR job and already you're working in a unionized environment. Normally you have to be kind of, I nearly said battle hardened then, but that sounds really bad. You have to build up a lot of resilience before you start with that union workforce. But I like the approach that Pepsi took there, because by the sounds of it, and this is something I worked with a client on a couple of years ago on an induction program, we called it a tour of duty, where you get to sit in the trucks, you get to do sales. You get presumably then when you went into your HR role, you had a real good sense of what people were facing on a day-to-day basis, what their issues were, so that you had a lot of empathy for that, I'm assuming, when you got into HR.
Yes. And that's absolutely, what the reason of doing all of that was, Colin. And it's something that I still hold very close to my heart, which is that everything that you do in a function specifically like HR, right, it's very important to have business at the center of everything that you would want to do. And I think unless you spend time on the ground in your early years, as you get more and more senior, you become more and more distant from what's actually happening on the ground. And which is where, you know, over the years that I spent in PepsiCo, I think those initial 6 to 8 months really helped me a lot to ground me, to understand, you know, everything that I was talking about. What is just, was it just airy fairy, you know, out of a tower sitting somewhere distant? Or did it really make sense, you know? And the other way that it helped me was that I built a lot of network, you know, at the ground level. So every time I would think of an intervention or a process, an initiative, I could go back and check with those people, you know, saying that, do you think it makes sense? Or rather than just, you know, coming up with a theory, which may or may not make sense to people on the ground, because I do truly believe that the reason for your existence is business itself, right? Unless and until it makes sense on the ground, it's not going to help you in any which ways, just to think of fancy theories sitting in your desks.
Fancy theory. We could do a podcast just on fancy theories. I've got so many of them. I've heard about so many. But I think you make a really good point there when we, you know, when we think about culture, because obviously when you're doing all this, it's, I think it's around about 2008, 2009, where the world is about to change significantly post-global financial crisis. And we recognize that whole mantra of the 90s of greed is good, isn't good. And people start thinking more about culture. And you know, one of the things that I talk a lot about, and you just talked about then, is that sense of, actually, if we do something together, people are more likely to engage with it. They're more likely to provide feedback. They're more likely to try and make it work than if we just, exactly as you said, sit in an office and tell people that that's what they have to do. That's the kind of thing that causes disengagement. Do you agree?
Yes, I totally agree. I think, you know, two things in that, exactly what you're saying. One is that you have to get people included. You know, you have to get their views. Because I do believe that, you know, in today's day and age, right, if you're working in any, pretty much any industry where you have competition, which is pretty much, again, every industry, unless and until you're able to execute your strategy, there's no value of that strategy, actually. So the whole value is on executing it, you know, perfectly. And that execution cannot happen sitting in the office, right? For every organization, it's got to happen on the ground. And unless you've heard the voice of the people there, you understand, you know, what's going to work or how it's going to work for them, you're not going to be able to make it happen. And hence, totally agree with you.
I love that. I really love this concept of the management program. And we'll move on from this in a minute. But I really do love it because you get a real, for me, not only do you get a sense of boots on the ground, what's happening on a day-to-day basis, what are the conversations, and particularly in a unionized environment, and I've worked in one myself, is, you know, kind of what are the things that people are looking for to safeguard humans, for example. And then from an organization perspective, what's the strategy? And then there's the operating model piece in the middle. There's the structure, there's process, there's governance. And it's how we bring all of those things together, which is exactly as you said, that's what creates business success. And you got a view of this in your first 12 months within the organization. Now, I'm not suggesting that you got everything right. None of us ever do. But that's a pretty great way to start your career, is to get that level of information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I really cherish, you know, those learnings that I got. And I think you mentioned it early on. You said resilience. I would say two things. You know, when I worked in the factory environment, Colin, two things that I learned. One was resilience. No matter what, you know, you've got to move on and do something, because every day something or the other will go wrong. But, you know, you're not going to dwell too much on that, but move forward and see what next, you know. And the other thing was decision making, if you ask me, because I was quite young and fairly inexperienced. And I'm not sure why, but the company did place a lot of, you know, responsibility on my shoulders. And I realized that right or wrong, you know, at the time that it is important, you have to make a decision and back yourself in that. And later on, you can always reflect on your decision and say that, you know, whether I did the right thing or the wrong thing. But in that moment where it is required, it is important to make a decision. And that is where you learn the most. You know, later on, one can always say that, you know, in retrospect, I could have done differently, etc., etc. And that has a great value as well. But I think that moment of decision making, that it's on you to decide, if there are people who want to stand and talk and they're asking you yes or no, you cannot say, like in our offices, you know, today I have that luxury to go back to people and say, let me come back to you, you know, but at the ground level, you don't have that luxury. When somebody's standing there in front of you and saying, should I do this or not? You've got to make a decision. And then I learned to back myself with that, to say that, okay, you know, I must have decided this at that time with all the intelligence, with everything that I could think in that moment. So that next time when I face the same situation, what might I do differently? But at that time, you have to decide. So if I have to, you know, remember two things that I learned from a leadership perspective in that stint was resilience as well as decision making.
That is, I mean, for anybody listening, that is such a, it's such a great thing to learn, is that at that moment in time, you have to make a decision. Yes, you can reflect back, but at that moment in time, a decision that it requires, you know, I always think that what you want to do is make a quick decision, but don't be too hasty.
Correct.
Don't make a rash decision, you know, actually gather the information. Now you stayed with Pepsi for a couple of years and then you kind of went away.
Yes.
And was that to get more experience, Bhavya?
Yes. At the time, the startup world wasn't what it is today. It wasn't so developed, right? And so I got this opportunity and, where Bharti, which is a big business group in India, along with Walmart, which is, of course, globally known, they were coming together and it was like a startup. So I think it had all the, ingredients that would be very attractive, which is that two really big names, but the organization was still a startup, which meant that I would get to design a lot of things, do things differently. And hence, I think that is what really attracted me at the time. And I said, okay, let me go for it. You know, let's see what it is. Because here in PepsiCo, you know, after spending some time, I was like, okay, now I understand the factory, what next? And in fact, I wasn't even, looking for a job. I had gone to attend a training and I ended up meeting a friend and she's the one who told me, here is this. And through conversations, I found it so interesting, you know, that everything in talent management needed to be designed from scratch. And, I was just a couple of years out of B school, which is when you think that, you know, designing is the big thing, after you have all the experience and you realize execution is the most important thing. I think at the time in my mind, I was like, well, I'll get to design all these processes and strategy and stuff like that. So that's what's really attracted me. And I moved over to Bharti Walmart or Bharti Retail at the time.
You know, one of the things that I always say is, you know, and people talk a lot about luck, oh, you've been really lucky. I always think that the luckiest people that you meet are not only creative in their thinking, they find different solutions to the same problems that everybody has, but also that they take an element of risk. And that sounds like it's something that really attracted you. You probably weighed it up, do I do this, do I do that, and decided that actually this would be really good for me. But it was the riskier option, right? You could have stayed exactly where you are.
Yes.
And there's probably so much more learning that you took by taking a risk, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I personally, I do believe that risk taking is very important. And I think I have kind of followed that through with all my decisions as well, because I feel like unless you push yourself out of the comfort zone, you're never going to learn something different. And I think that's exactly what prompted me. And to your question, interestingly, when you say that, you know, you must have thought about it a lot. Actually, I'm personally very spontaneous, as a person. So I decide pretty quickly. I go with my gut and, I do a little research and it sounds right. I'm happy to take the jump. But I would say that, there were so many conversations, because as soon as I told PepsiCo about my decision, I was doing fine. And they were like, but why would you do this, I think, instead of me thinking, there was so much advice and very good advice, coming my way, saying that, are you really sure? Do you really want to make this decision? And there was a lot of conversation with the then CHRO of PepsiCo India. And I really credit him for spending so much time with me to explain, I could have just left, but I think he spent a lot of time to help me think through the decision. But again, I think the risk factor in me just kind of took over. And if you ask me, even when I put all the pros and cons and everything together, at the bottom line, I felt like, look, I mean, right now, and at the time I wasn't married, I did not have a child, nothing, right? Pretty much no responsibilities that were waiting for me at the personal end. So I felt like right now in my life, if I can't take a risk, when will that time be? So even if it's a very risky decision, I mean, might as well go for it, because you know, everything else in life, you know, it just becomes more and more complicated. So I felt like, forget it. I mean, you know, let me just go for it with all logic, everything I understand, but I just want to try. So I think that was the true reason.
What a fabulous story. And I love that. And my wife always jokes that I took all of my risk when I was married with two young children, but that was for different reasons. Anyway, that's a whole other podcast. So anyway, you spent 2.5 years with Walmart and then back to PepsiCo. And was it a different environment than when you left? Obviously, you were kind of, it's 2010, probably 2009 now. Has the business really started to grow in India at that point?
Yes. So, it was different when I came back. The first and the most obvious one was that when I left, I was working in a factory. When I came back to a headquarter role. And that's also an interesting story, how I came back. Again, I was happy in Bharti Walmart, and one of my seniors from college, actually, she was leaving, and I already knew everybody in PepsiCo. We were in touch even when I was away. So, someone called me and said that she's leaving. Do you want to take this role? And again, what really attracted me was the role, because it was to head all the campus relations and the leadership development programs. And I myself, having benefited from that, right? Like I spoke about earlier, it has always had a soft corner, you know, in my heart. And I felt very good that, I'll be able to come back and lead that program and be able to build it and in a better way for, students who are going to come into PepsiCo. And I think it was all that and much more. So when I came in, we ran the management trainee program. Along with that, we actually set up a graduate engineer trainee program and a couple of other mid-management programs that we decided to run. So that was what really attracted me, that, I'll be able to go to all these campuses, meet more students. And it was a very external facing role, which was, again, a very, aspirational role for me at the time.
Did you start to get a sense of culture then? I think, 2010, 2011, 2012, and as you progressed through, because I think you were there for almost 10 years in your second stint, culture really started to come to the fore. And I know when I first started my research, kind of almost eight, 9 years ago, Pepsi, I think under Indira Nooro, that was one of the case studies for an organization that really puts time, thought, and effort into culture. And I guess you were at the forefront of that, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think, I was very lucky, to get all these right stints. So while I was doing this whole, external facing campus relations kind of program, I was also kind of the manager for all of these, young students who came in. And along with that, I also started a lot of work on diversity and inclusion, as well as culture building with some of the other teams. And I think that is where I was at the center of it, to understand that, what's working, what's not working. We used to, at the time, do a lot of focus group discussions, a lot of reach out to people to understand, how is it that they're experiencing the culture of the organization? Mm-hmm. Because one part of it is to put up posters and danglers and, all kinds of things to say that what our culture is. But at the ground level, what is it that people are experiencing? How do they really feel decision-making is? Is it really following the values or the culture of the organization? And like I said, I was very lucky to be in an organization that really walked the talk. Mm. And, wherever we got any feedback, I think the other part that I really liked about all the time that I spent there was that I don't think any organization is perfect, neither was PepsiCo. But every time we heard a piece of feedback, we always took it back seriously to say, what can we do about it? Mm-hmm. And it's not everything that you can address, right? But whatever is in your hands to address, are we actively addressing that? And I think employees really appreciate that, which is that if you took feedback from them, what did you do about it? And if you're not going to change something, then did you go back and tell them that you're not?
And you did a lot of work with diversity and inclusion. I think I read somewhere that you won award in 2015. Can you give us a sense of, because I often say that organizations talk about diversity and inclusion, but they don't really do it. Simply sending everybody on a training course doesn't mean that you're a diverse and inclusive organization. Can you give me a sense of the work that you undertook then, Bob, and even the work that you're doing now within Lenovo?
Yeah. No, I think, Colin, I think my understanding of diversity and inclusion and the foundations of what I believe now were laid then. And again, I was very fortunate to work with a group of people, you know, who really believed in the cause, right? And what we did was, like you said, I don't think we went at it only one way. Mm. And all the learnings that I've had in that stint, I have leveraged them when I've come to Lenovo to be able to take it forward. And just to give you an example, we said that how do we look at a topic like diversity and inclusion? Because it's so broad, you know, you could be doing everything under the sun and or just doing trainings and saying that, look, we're so serious about it. First and foremost, I think, you know, we looked at a lot of data and we said that where is it that, you know, we're really lacking and where is it, where are our strengths? And after all of that, we did a deep dive with the leadership team. And from that, we came up with a strategy. And that was a strategy, Colin, that we stuck to for many, many years after that. And I think that was the reason for success. So we said that we're not just going to work on training or just recruiting more women. Gender at the time was the core area of focus, mm-hmm. which I think for most corporates was at the time. As far as diversity is concerned. So we said that we will look at the agenda holistically. So we are an FMCG company. The first and the most important thing is to look at infrastructure itself. Our employees don't just sit in office. They sit in all across the country, in warehouses, in factories, you know, going out in the field. So how can we look at infrastructure and better infrastructure? And specifically, if you're looking at women, how can we make it safer for women? Because in India, I mean, if you look at the spread of the country, not every single place is safe, right? So we started with the infrastructure. The second pillar we said was recruitment, right? Where we said that for every role, can we ensure that we have a slate of women? We are not saying that, you know, between a man and a woman, even if the man is much better, please take the man. Obviously not. You have to get the best possible talent into the organization. But having said that, I think most often, and even today I see that in Lenovo, which is that the effort has to be in creating an equal slate. You know, as long as you're putting both women and men together on that slate to say that select the best person, there are chances that there will be women who will be selected. But women are more difficult to find and put on the slate, which is why, you know, in every recruitment, you will have 9 men and 1 woman. And hence, the chances of a woman getting selected are obviously much lower. So the second one was all the efforts around talent acquisition, retention, all of that. And the third pillar, which was actually not gender linked, was inclusion. To say that how do we build a culture while we can get on people, while we can build all the infrastructure, unless we build a culture which is truly inclusive, not in terms of gender. I think inclusion has got nothing to do with gender. Inclusion is about ideas. It's about amalgamation of different things that people bring to the table. How can we build a culture like that? So I think a lot of training interventions that we did there or sensitization interventions that we did there lied in that pillar. And then finally, we said that once we move a little ahead on these three core pillars of infrastructure, talent acquisition, as well as inclusion, then how do we build our employer brand around? Because eventually, once we've traveled a certain distance, we would like to talk about it internally as well as externally to get more people on board, to create more allies, etc. And I think that was a strategy that we set in at that time. It was a core team that was working on it, not just myself. Actually, I was a part of that team and it was led by a lady called Pavitra, who today leads HR for PepsiCo in India. And like I said, I was very fortunate to be, you know, part of that entire team. And in fact, you're right, we won an award for it also, which was amongst the highest awards in PepsiCo at the time.
Fabulous. I mean, that for me, that's a blueprint of a great approach. And, you know, the infrastructure piece is often the piece that gets missed, I think. So that's fabulous. Listen, I don't have you for too much longer. I wanted to ask you about Lenovo because you joined during the pandemic, I think. Or is that right?
That's right. That's right.
I mean, of all the times to switch jobs, yeah. You took on all of the issues of the pandemic and you started a new job.
Yes.
So how have you found your time? I think you've been with them now for just over 12 months. How's that time? How have you found that? How did you find joining during the pandemic, Bhavya? And what have you taken from your career so far that you've been able to kind of weave into the work you're doing at Lenovo?
Sure. So Colin, I think, you know, a little earlier we spoke about my tendency to take risk, right? So I think joining Lenovo and deciding that this is what I wanted to do was a risky decision at the time. I was obviously doing well in PepsiCo and I could have continued. But, you know, I started feeling like, you know, if I stay further in PepsiCo, I'm going to spend my life here because it is a good organization. You can always get different roles and you always get pushed out of your comfort zone. I can always do different things. But then I wanted to push myself into an area that I knew nothing about. And trust me, technology is an area that I knew really, really nothing about, you know. And I think before Lenovo, I wouldn't even call myself like a tech whiz or a gadget enthusiast, etc., right? Which is why I felt like, you know, this is something so different that is going to push me to learn. And which is how I decided. And in fact, it meant a change of city within India and all of that. So at the family end as well, there was a lot of change as well as work end. And a lot of things didn't turn out as how I had planned, because when I accepted the offer for Lenovo, I had assumed that, you know, I'll be able to come here and join in person. But then the second wave started and we couldn't relocate and I had to join from a distance. So I was in a different city, which is Gurgaon. And to join in a leadership team from a distance, and especially in a role like HR, isn't very easy. But I think my colleagues here made it really, you know, easy for me to settle in, to be able to understand what it meant, to be able to spend a lot of time with me to explain from scratch, because I was coming in and saying, look, I know nothing. Please, can you tell me from the beginning, how does it exactly work? I think that was my level. And, you know, in terms of what I've been able to apply from PepsiCo, see, I think all my fundamentals from an HR perspective or leadership or culture or organization development, etc., all of that, I think, got built over the years. That is something that I was very comfortable with in terms of my subject, which I know. What I didn't know was the industry, the organization, the culture here, right? And I think I spent a lot of time understanding that while applying everything that I knew about HR and allied fields. So I think the journey has been amazing. I think Lenovo is another great organization. And again, you know, huge amount of learning, you know, in terms of what works, what doesn't work, completely different type of people here in terms of what they're looking for, what motivates them. Obviously, the core of people remains the same, but culturally, you know, things change. And I think we have to understand what's working here. How's the organization been working? Because I don't believe that as soon as you come in, you have to kind of trash everything that's been happening and do something new. I do believe that, you know, large organizations always have something that works for them. And I think it is on us to come and spend time and understand what is it that's been working for them and build further on that. I really believe that you have to build on strengths, you know, and not just come and say that here are five things that we can do differently. I think so. I got to spend a lot of time doing that. And now I've spent a little more than 2 years, in fact, with Lenovo. I joined them in 2021 April. So it's been a very exciting, pretty crazy, full of learning ride for me, is what I would say.
Has the organization embraced hybrid working or greater flexibility? Is that still an experiment that's kind of progressing? Bhavi, would you say?
Yeah, actually, Colin, Lenovo, even prior to the pandemic, was fairly flexible. You know, I think these terms of hybrid and, you know, flexible working, etc., fairly new and we're kind of getting used to that. But I think the ways of working within Lenovo were fairly flexible even earlier. That's what I got to understand. So we have a hybrid policy now, and I think people are quite comfortable with it, because even before, this is how they work, which is that not everybody is forced to come into office. You know, we do have a 3-day in office, 2-day you can do work from home, but it's not really high on monitoring or saying that why haven't you come or why did you come 5 days a week. As an example, if I look at a person like me, I would come for all the days, you know, as much as possible. Yeah, because I prefer working from office and it's my choice. Yeah. Whereas, you know, people in different stages of life, different stages, you know, of their career may want to work differently. And I think the organization is extremely understanding of a person's circumstances and able to mold work-life basis that. Of course, there are some jobs which need you to be in office, right? So we do have a factory in India in Pondicherry. So if you work out of a factory, you've got to go to the factory to make the production happen. Or if you're in sales, you've got to meet your clients or your partners, whoever it is. So I think depending on different job roles and as much as is possible, the organization is quite flexible. And I think the people are quite appreciative of that as well.
Fabulous. I've got one more question for you, Bobby, and then I'm going to let you get on with your day. So, you know, in terms of everything that you've got to do right now, and obviously you're learning the business, by the sounds of it, in your own time, which is something that you would do. How do you keep yourself relevant? How do you, you know, what do you do to educate yourself on the changing nature of HR? I see that you've attended a couple of conferences, spoke at a couple of conferences recently. What are the things that you do to make sure that you're always a step ahead of what's happening in your field?
I think the first and most important thing, Colin, is the right attitude. I believe that, you know, as we grow in our career, it's very easy to become very laid back and think that we know everything. I think being vulnerable is very, very important as a leader today, for you to put yourself out there and say, look, I don't know. And I think that I constantly do to myself, telling myself that, look, I may not know. You may not know the maximum in a room, even if you have the maximum experience or you are the senior most person. And I think that attitude itself helps a lot and has helped me a lot. As an example, even if when I've shifted from FMCG to Lenovo, which is a completely different organization, I think I've just put myself out there to say that, look, I don't know, please teach me from the beginning. And I think that attitude of mine really helps me. The second thing is that, you know, while I totally believe in trainings and all of that, I think a lot of learning for me over the years has come on the job. I constantly try to push myself into different areas to just put yourself out there. And once you're in that situation, I believe that we're smart enough to go and read about it, go and talk to people about it, and, you know, do your own research about it. And I think that action itself helps me, which is that, you know, I put myself intentionally in a situation where I don't know. And automatically then, you know, my system kind of starts functioning. And, you know, I start feeling like, let me read up more about it. Let me see what's happening latest. That's the second action. And lastly, which might sound, you know, a little boring, but if you ask me, I fundamentally believe that frameworks, you know, or research that people have done over a period of time is useful. I wouldn't say that it is 100% applicable, that you can read something online and kind of just use it immediately, or things that I read in college are completely applicable. But I believe that I always go back, you know, as soon as there's a problem which I haven't faced before, I always go back and say that, where can I borrow from? You know, because there's so much work and research that people have done, that I believe that frameworks, while or academic, you know, concepts, they may not be 100% applicable, but you can always find parts of them that help you move forward. And I always do that as well. Actively go back to read, you know, what did I study about this, or what's happening latest in the area around this, and see how is it applicable to my context, to my business, and what is going to make sense, you know, in the situation that I am in. So I would say those three things really help.
What a fantastic way to end the podcast. It's just been, you're so generous. You shared so much in 30 minutes. So Bobby, I want to say a huge, huge thank you for giving up your time and for joining us on the Culture Makers podcast today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Colin. I think it's been a very nice, very engaging conversation. Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure completely. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the link with your colleagues and friends, or with your connections on social media. If you'd like to find out more about the work that I do, head to www.colindellis.com or find me on LinkedIn.